Exchange-wise, ATS Singapore returns to the Sands Exhibition Centre on July 3rd. Grab your ticket now to secure your place. You'll hear the latest on curation for marketing, the impact of AI on the industry, and what advertising in a cookieless world now looks like. Join your peers and an outstanding lineup of speakers as we shed light on the challenges and innovations in media marketing and commerce.
The MadTech Podcast, news of the week in ad tech and marketing tech, brought to you by ExchangeWire.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of what I would describe as a very special episode of the MadTech Podcast. I'm Anne-Marie Sheedy, CRO at ExchangeWire and your host this week. The reason I've described this episode as special is for many reasons. One is none other than the company that I'm joined by today. We have the head honchos of ExchangeWire, Lindsay Rowntree, Kieran O'Kane, and Rachel Smith. Hello and welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
the personality.
The energy levels. The other reasons why I think it's particularly special is we've got some cracking stories to cover, otherwise described as a car crash chat ready to happen before we pressed record. So let's get cracking. The first story is from The Guardian and is titled, Senate passes bill banning TikTok if parent company does not sell it. The Senate voted on Tuesday to pass a bill that will either ban TikTok or force a sale of the short-form video app, giving its China-based parent company ByteDance up to 1 year to divest its crown jewel before facing deletion from US app stores. Big story. Everyone's talking about it. I'm going to come to Rachel first. Actually, no, I'm going to come to Lindsay first on this one. Yep. And it's quite simple. Very direct question. How would a TikTok ban... TikTok ban affect the advertising ecosystem?
I just got to say, TikTok ban would be bad.
Well, I'm pretty sure we've had a discussion about TikToks
before. I've not eaten a TikTok for about 20 years.
Orange TikToks, though, are excellent.
I know, I wouldn't mind an orange TikTok. Mm. The lime ones, I don't
know. No.
If you eat together, it's okay.
Okay, yeah. Come
but
on,
the orange,
folks.
Sorry. So, Anne-Marie, I'll answer your question. A TikTok ban would be...
It's
because it's the afternoon and we're all a bit like overfilled with food.
And hey, it's Friday morning.
Oh yeah, sorry, it's Friday morning.
Have you mentioned that it was the 300th episode, or are we leaving that till last?
Well, there goes that little nugget for later on.
Well, you can just mention it last. We can just edit that bit out. But I was wondering,
that's too
what
late.
You were doing
it now. We're not editing this bit out.
No. We're definitely not editing anything out of this.
Okay. So anyway,
a TikTok ban.
I can't. A TikTok ban would. There's just so many different ways it could go We don't know like what's going to happen next. So I think that the bill would be that if it is, ByteDance have to divest TikTok within 9 months. And if they don't do that, it's banned. From what I can tell, China aren't particularly happy about TikTok being divested. So that might not even be an option. If it is an option, will it be divested in the US only? Will it be divested globally? Who's going to buy it? Because there aren't that many people that want to buy it. The likes of Meta and Google will probably be blocked because of anti-competition laws. The whole Oracle / Microsoft thing this all happened a couple of years ago, that didn't really go through. Could that go through again this time? Or are they even interested in buying it anymore? It's such a messy company to buy. If they are divested, you know, most of what people are using internally to run the company are kind of operated by ByteDance, not by TikTok. So I'm not sure if anyone really would want it. From an advertising perspective, if it gets divested, it would be probably an absolute mess because the new company will be so very, very, would have to be so very different from the old company. And whoever buys it, you just think of like Elon Musk's X, right? And you think, well, look what happened there with advertising. Look what happened there with kind of the functionality of it. It's not been that successful. It would be very, very challenging to make it a success for TikTok as well. If it's divested in the US only, you know, TikTok is a global company, a global product, you know, from a user perspective. You know, if I'm a user in the UK, I probably follow God knows how many US influencers, et cetera, et cetera. I want to see content globally, not just in my own market. If the US Kieran, I think it's a point you made earlier. If it were divested in the US, the UK wouldn't want anything to do with it. There's no way that they would allow it to keep to still be owned by ByteDance and run as it's been running in the UK. So it just, I mean, the whole thing, frankly, feels like one giant mess.
And the Senate have kind of got control of this now, right?
Yeah.
You know, having passed the legislation, they are the people in the power position at the moment.
And also, it was passed in a really strange way. It was passed in the middle of like a humanitarian aid bill for Israel, Taiwan and Ukraine. And if it had been, and because last time it was tried, they tried to pass it as a standalone bill and it got rejected. But this time, because it was like gussied up among humanitarian aid, it's been put through. So obviously TikTok are bloody delighted. The whole thing just feels really strange. And Biden opened a TikTok account a couple of months ago through all this as well.
Did he?
On the day of the Super Bowl, apparently, he opened a TikTok account. And Trump hates TikTok, but also doesn't like Meta either and doesn't trust them as much as he trusts TikTok. And Trump doesn't really want the ban. I know, it's all really confusing.
Hold on. Trump's biggest donor is one of the biggest shareholders in ByteDance, hence the reason
why. Oh, there you go.
Trump is not led by any ideological thinking here. He's led by money.
Well, of course.
So that's the reason why he is now lukewarm about a ban. In terms of the how the bill was passed, it was a piece of political genius in many ways because the only subject that really has bipartisan support in Washington is the ban on TikTok. And the feeling within the US, rightly or wrongly, is that TikTok is effectively a soft power play for the CCP. There are many, many Americans, 150 million Americans using the app. And there is studies to show that certain stories have been watered down by TikTok versus other platforms. So, you know, you can take a view on it. The reality is TikTok is probably going to have to go independent because there is no way the courts will uphold any kind of
Chinese ownership.
No, it won't. Like they'll go to a Supreme Court and try to go against legislation on a First Amendment of free speech piece. But there is a track record of upholding national security over free speech. So the reality is that TikTok now can't get out of this. And they can mobilize all the creators in the platform, but it doesn't make a difference. The one stumbling block to all this was the Senate. And Johnson, who's the Speaker and of the House of Representatives, who's a Republican, realized that if he inserted this into a Ukraine and Israeli bill, it would likely pass in the Senate because the Democrats would back it and so would moderate Republicans. So, you know, a bit of political machinations going on around this. But the reality is now, this is probably the biggest story of the year because TikTok is in a proper bind here. I don't know what they do. The Chinese have already said that they will not allow a divestiture because they don't want the algorithm to fall into independent hands, which is a weird thing to say by anybody. Obviously, the Chinese see it as a valuable sort of asset. What asset they see it as a political weapon or as a sort of economic weapon, I don't know. But remember this, that TikTok is banned in India for these very reasons. And now if a ban in the US happens, it is very likely that both Europe and UK will probably follow suit. So the sensible thing for ByteDance is to divest of this asset and let it go public. I don't think it should be bought. I think it should go public because it's actually worth a lot of money. TikTok could be a brilliant company, but it's now, I mean, this was coming. So now they have to face up to the problem. And the problem is they can't win this battle.
So you can imagine it's going to take at least the next 9 months plus some. I mean, they've got 9 months plus a 3 month grace period, I think, for them to resolve the matter, particularly if they're going to IPO and go independent and public, because it's going to require a lot of administration and paperwork. In the meantime, what happens to advertisers' budgets? Because we know a lot of them have been shifting over towards TikTok. So and the reason is because that's where, you know, we've talked about this many times. times before, that's where the kids are found. And the kids won't move until the platform's not there anymore, I don't think, you know, proven by one of the podcast stories that we chatted about last week, which was Taylor Swift's return to TikTok just prior to releasing her new album, and hot on the heels of her record company having a big fallout over artist royalties. And so I think that just proves the power of the platform to artists and creators because of the volume of people to be found on it. So where do advertisers' budgets go? You know, like we saw with X, they'll disappear from the platform if things get controversial enough. But in the meantime, will they just stick it out?
I think they will do, because they'll just go where the kids go. And if the kids are still there, they'll still make sure they're there. And then when the kids go, maybe Snapchat will have like a massive resurgence as a result of this. Yeah. And maybe everyone will go to Snapchat and wax work about how wonderful Snapchat is. Mm. It could be the renaissance of Snapchat, everyone.
Well, you can also imagine any other short form video platform dancing in the streets, right? Like, it must be fun times over at Instagram today. They'll be going, yes.
They're probably having a great time. Yeah.
Budget.
The reality is that no brand will want to be wrapped up in any kind of national security issue. The thing is, probably TikTok would hope that Trump wins the election, but if it's signed into law, he can't just sign an executive order. It has to go back through the House and the Senate for it to be unwound, if you will. And that means that you would have to have everybody agreeing. But the reality is, both, like, there's a small chunk of Republicans and a small, very slither of Democrats that think it shouldn't happen. But the majority of the Democrats and the Republicans agree in this. So I think this is done now, right? Like, I was looking at that Senate vote last night. I think that's the one stumbling block, because if it had gone through as a separate bill, there was already a bunch of senators who were saying, this is an attack on free speech and First Amendment, et cetera, et cetera. But because it was wrapped up in the Ukrainian bill and the Israeli bill and the Indo-Pacific bill, which I think is like financing for, you know,
Taiwan
and sort of Pacific islands to give them more money so
protection
they don't fall into China.
In the Pacific,
yeah.
Region.
That it just got lost. It's just so cleverly done. I mean, like, I think the head counsel of TikTok stepped down because he knows he's beaten. He can't win this. So the next 90 days will be interesting. I think you're going to see. My bet is that it's spun out because it would just die in the
globally.
Vine. It has to be spun out globally, yeah. I think. Otherwise, it's just, you know, it'll die in vine.
But again, how do you rustle that up in, I know 12 months might seem like a long time, but geez, you'd be working against the clock from now.
But it's quite convenient that it's happening bankers. Now, right? Because there's reports about the meddling in the midterms previously in 2022. So let's move that away. Let's have all the money that's been spent on local. Let's put it on network TVs or whatever, so all the money stays in the US, doesn't go to China. They can control it, they can manage it, they can do what they like. And then, you know, there'll be something else happening in after the elections. There'll be some other catastrophe. Trump will probably be back in, and who knows? So they're securing the money.
I agree with that. One of the other things that's interesting right now, this is the Chinese response, right? They said it's wrong, it's an attack on Chinese companies, but the reality, like, neither Meta or Google can operate in China, right? Because the Chinese government run an autocratic state, right? They want complete control over media platforms. And obviously Google and Meta have sort of, you know, they're, call themselves free speech advocates, but like to a certain extent.
But they're not.
Yeah. But, you know, how, like, you can't complain in one breath about a Chinese company being vindicated or being sort of victimized in a market when you have banned all the American companies in your market, right? So I don't think the CCP has got a leg to stand on there, right? But it's a highly politicized, it's a really messy situation that TikTok can't get out of. They're in a death spiral now, right? So the only way out of this is to kind of come to an agreement with the, you know, the Chinese government, the American government, and ByteDance. But the Chinese government said no. So, like, we could have a situation where TikTok just stops working. in 9 months literally doesn't work, and then people just like, look at people, kids are fickle, right?
Well, they'll
like,
just find another platform.
They'll find another platform. Like, this is the reality. Remember the scene in Social Network? If you're down for a day, you lose all your users. You know that Zuck was obsessed about keeping the servers alive, because if you're down for a day, you lose the addiction. So when people break that addiction, it's just like any habit. You break a habit for 30 days and you'll be fine, right? You know, so
I think that there's a lot of obviously concern from influencers and small businesses that have created their livelihoods through TikTok. But I think as well, it kind of, it reinforces the message that you should not put all your trust and kind of build businesses on the back of these platforms that can just, because they're not there. They don't exist for you. Anything can happen at any point to change that. Like, you know, publishers that exist because Google News, and then Google News turns around and says, we're not going to send traffic your way anymore unless you do this, this, and this. Like, it's that kind of example again, that if you're relying on this one platform to be your livelihood, then...
makes you vulnerable.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say you're an idiot, but that's a bit harsh, isn't it? Because... you know, but spread your bets.
Spread your bets to where? So the next story.
Well, Snapchat.
Let's talk about Google, shall we? The second story.
Yeah.
That made the headlines this week. So surprise, surprise, Google delays third-party cookie demise yet again. Great intro from Seb Joseph, this story in DigiDays. Google is delaying the intro of third-party cookies in its Chrome browser again. In other surprising developments, water remains wet. Brilliant opener. So earlier this month, the ICO, that's the Information Commissioner's Office, which is the UK data watchdog here, voiced its own reservations. And in January, the CMA raised 39 concerns to be addressed before the plan could proceed. Apparently, Google said, we remain committed to engaging closely with the CMA and ICO, and we hope to conclude that process this year. Assuming we can reach an agreement, we envision proceeding with third-party cookie deprecation starting early next year. Wow, wow, wow. Surprise, surprise, surprise. You know, are we in any way surprised that this has been kicked down the road again? Because it's the third time, I think, that it's pushed back this target. Where do we start, Rachel? I mean, this is a can of worms in a way. What are your thoughts?
So I'm starting to wonder if maybe it will actually be a regulatory body like the CMA, the Competition Markets Authority here in the UK, that push this to conclusion rather than Google. Because I'm not saying that Google don't want to conclude the scenario, implement privacy sandbox, move away from third-party cookie tracking. I'm not saying that they don't, you know, that they're not genuinely trying to implement some, technology updates that make advertising and marketing to people in some form of a personalized way, you know, suitable in Chrome whilst having consumer privacy in their mind. But I just think they tread such a fine line here. Mm. I don't think they'll ever really be able to balance the concept of consumer control with their own desire to create a profitable business, and with their own desire to control what happens in Chrome. And so I'm wondering if it will be a third party, a regulatory body that actually pushes this to conclusion. I think the other thing that's really interesting about this is the lack of surprise across the industry. Mm-hmm. That was 100% expected, I think, by lots of people. And one of the reasons why I think there's such a big degree of indifference to the news is because I do genuinely think lots of brands and marketers and buyers are earnestly progressing plans to carry out advertising and marketing in an environment that doesn't rely on cookies, whether that is transferring budgets to other environments altogether. We know the growth of, TV related advertising that isn't linear is taking off, advertising in other walled garden environments that don't necessarily rely on cookie tracking is becoming more and more popular. And I feel like that is, that's a snowball that's gathered enough pace that this is not going to slow the momentum of it. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's concerning brands that are already on this journey. There will be a number of buyers out there that are not on the journey. There's also the other side of the fence, which is publishers trying to ready themselves for an environment where they're not getting referral traffic from Chrome users and visitors to their site in that way via cookie tracking and targeting. And so, you know, again, I think that will be separated into the buckets of those publishers that have really diversified their monetization models and their business models, and those publishers who haven't. So I feel as though this has gone on for so long now that when Google finally pulled the trigger, it might not be the cataclysmic event that everyone expects it to be, because we've been waiting for it for such a long
time.
But
why are we still waiting? Why aren't we just cracking on? Do you know what I mean? I don't know, Kieran, if you've got any thoughts.
But I think that's what I just said. I think but you mean for those that aren't, why aren't they?
Waiting, looking.
Because it's easy to, you know, there are certain markets, I think, advertising markets, part of
they've
APAC.
Got stronghold.
Have got where they're very, Chrome reliant, and reaching users in a Chrome environment is really easy. But the other thing is, I think this is all happening against a backdrop of lots of other pieces of activity as well, which is why it's so interesting that the CMA and the ICO have got so much power in this tussle with Google. We're talking about a US-based massive big tech company and UK regulatory authorities here. And the first thing is, they're going to come across those sorts of problems and issues with other regulatory authorities, not just here in the UK. And the second thing is, I think that there are other levers that are being pulled elsewhere within the industry that are having an impact on this. We talk about the impact of MFA, made for advertising sites, on publishers' businesses. There's a big push to try to move budgets away from those sorts of sites and to try to make sure that that advertisers' money is going elsewhere. And I think those sorts of pieces of activity will continue to roll along outside of some of this, cookie deprecation, Google shenanigans.
I think the most worrying thing is that most of the articles I've read today have all said, in some way, shape or form, advertisers will be breathing a sigh of relief today. Like, advertisers are going to be so happy, and that's what you're saying, right?
I think that
And they will be, because advertisers, if you think back to GDPR, everyone was joking the advertisers weren't ready for GDPR either, and they were waiting to the last possible minute to then try and be compliant. And I think that don't underestimate, not that anybody in this industry does, how much inertia, and how much of their budget goes into Google. So if Google aren't going to move, they'll kind of go, well, we'll move, we'll do what Google does and do what Google tells us to do. And Google have just gone, well, we're not going to do it. And they kind of go, brilliant. Then we'll just kind of sit back and wait for a bit longer. It makes things tougher, because it makes the opportunity outside of Google kind of feel even more diminished, because they were relying on Google. This is an opportunity for them to rely less on Google and seek alternative avenues. And Google have delayed it again. So they've kind of gone, oh, okay, fine. Well, if Google are doing that, we'll wait for Google to do what they're going to do next, and then we'll look at something else. So it's giving, again, more power to Google. And while, the reason that Google said they've done this is because they had a lot of, they couldn't actually get anyone to agree on whether it was working or not. They had some that came, they kept referring to it as like hot takes. Some were saying it was great, others were saying it was bad. Obviously, we know that we had webcasts of IB Tech Lab, and the general consensus there for the publisher side was, what an absolute shit show.
Yeah.
And then the CMA, of course, have said, we cannot actually prove that Privacy Sandbox is working as it should be. And the sequential targeting, sequential bidding is actually kind of not favouring Google in every sense of the word, because it apparently was favouring Google. But this will ultimately, this news today will still ultimately favour Google.
Well, I wonder why. Where were you searching? What results did you get? How are they modified?
Well, sure, I might ask Google.
Kieran, would you like to contribute?
I'm utterly disappointed by this. I think Google have either done this, they've done it in such a cack-handed way, such an arrogant way. What they should have done was sit down with the stakeholders and figured out what the CMA would have been comfortable with. I think what they're doing is the right thing, as in, like, the idea of,
trying.
The idea of getting rid of third-party cookies is a good thing for privacy. The way they've gone about it is completely half-arsed. I don't know what was in their minds. Like, so trying to basically move ad tech from GAM into Chrome, and then Chrome sort of dictating where, how these auctions will function within the browser was one of the worst moves they could have made, right? Because, I mean, even their biggest sort of like, they're one of the biggest contributors to IAB, right?
Yeah.
And even then, the IAB Tech Lab, which is part of the IAB, actually came out deliberately to highlight this fact that Google were basically trying to move, you know, the execution piece, the control over auctions into Chrome, right? Safari never did that. So why couldn't they have just followed Safari and turned it all off completely, right? I don't agree with all these people about we need cookies. I don't agree with that at all. I think there's...
We don't need cookies.
We don't.
And we'd all agreed that, we don't. I felt like,
and the
as
thing
well.
Is, there's people who I genuinely respect, but they're talking utter shite on LinkedIn about movement for open web and all killed publishers, right? If these publishers were any half decent, they'd have a decent... They don't require cookies to make money, right? There is plenty of technology out there, right? We've got contextual, we've got attention, we've got so many cool things in the space. And all this does is just hit, it just stops people in their tracks, right? Like lazy people going, oh yeah, well, I'll do whatever Google's doing. And Rob Webster said it well. He said, like, this decision just favors Google because last click attribution is how Google controls our entire industry, and the cookie enforces that, right? So I'm really, really disappointed. I don't know where we go from here. Like, we could be in a situation where we're still talking about this fucking thing in 2030, like, you know?
But that's what people are joking. They're bantering 29, 30.
It's ridiculous. I don't know if Google's done this by design, or is it just sheer incompetence across the group? Because it feels to me like the product they built around privacy standards was just not sufficient. And the way they went about it, where they didn't even sit down with the major stakeholders in our industry, right? And say, look, what would be sufficient? Do you know what would have worked? The CMA would have passed this if they weren't trying to be greedily hold on to all the ad tech stack and basically just cement their advantage in the sort of media activation piece. Because...
But hang on a minute. Right there, you're saying that delaying the process of deprecating third-party cookies gives Google an advantage. But the proposals that they'd put forward through Privacy Sandbox were so ill thought through that it still gives Google an advantage.
Yeah.
So what have they made? You know, have they facilitated a decision that gives them a bigger advantage?
Was this their plan all along?
Exactly, by getting the CMA to say, whoa, you can't. We're not ready. You can't do this yet because we feel you're going to be too advantaged if you actually undertake it in the way that you've proposed. What the actual fuck's going on here? And tell us about your LinkedIn poll.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I ran a LinkedIn poll this morning about this very subject, asking various questions like why was the can kicked down the road again? I asked about, you know, the fact that the ad tech, Chrome's ad tech stack was exposed by brilliant work by the IAB Tech Lab and other sort of stakeholders in the industry, whether it was a poor replacement for third party cookies, whether it was poor execution and arrogance, which has basically been a sort of a feature of this whole process for the last 3 years, right? It's our way or the highway kind of thing, rather than like, let's get people in a room and think about advertisers, stakeholders, etc. And then the last question was all of the above, and all of the above got 64%. So it's a multitude. I don't think anybody understands this. I think that Google is so big that people are working in
across
independently, and it just turned into this absolute shit show. I'm flabbergasted that like organization that is so full of talented people cannot come up with a coherent strategy around this. And
it's the powers that be, probably, not the, you know, the talented people that
the hardworking
I was going to call them Joe Bloggs, but you know what I mean, people at the kind of core front of it, doing it, trying to initiate. They don't have any control.
This won't stop.
It's balance sheets.
If any Google people listen to this, this will not stop the DOJ or the European Union from forcing you to divest GAM in October or November of this year. This is not going to help your cause. If anything, it's going to make it worse, because there's going to be a feeling that you've taken advantage of this situation by trying to force. Because in my mind, I'm like you, is this Google Genius? Were they going to spin off GAM and then have the ad tech sit within Chrome and we'd never know the difference? Do they think that people are that stupid that they wouldn't call it out? Like, so.
But it depends on who they're talking to, right? Because they seem to chat to people that they pull the wool over their eyes and get things passed through, or they get a little slap on the wrist and they get a fine for something and they just crack on and do what they want anyway.
I think it's different now, right? Like, I think if we roll back, say, 5-6 years, early days of GDPR, we talk about, you know, what kind of fines they might have been issued.
Or who were
for,
involved in the initial conversations or
exactly,
steering committees.
I think it was all a little more naive back in those days. I think now you've got a far more well-informed industry. Yeah. You've got a far more well-informed network of industry bodies. You've got a, as Kieran referenced, a subset of a very important global industry body, the IAB Tech Lab, who are a group of technical professionals that deeply understand ad tech from an operational perspective and an execution perspective, who were very involved in the Privacy Sandbox Working Group, heavily critical of the testing phase earlier on this year of Privacy Sandbox APIs, and noted so many use cases for which Privacy Sandbox proposals just wouldn't be adequate and would ultimately make it impossible for publishers to continue making revenue off advertising in that context. So all of that was brought to the fore. They were heavily criticised by Google for saying that Google, you know, for saying that they didn't allow Google in their working group. The whole point of the IAB Tech Lab working group was we want to have an industry conversation and then take our concerns to Google. Mm-hmm. Everyone sort of collaborated, you know. So there has been a bit of what you just criticised them for, Kieran. I mean, I do agree with you. But there has been a bit of industry-wide collaboration to try to get to the bottom of this. But I think what's at the heart of it is actually what you then went on to say, which is that Google's a massive organisation. There's lots of cross-purposes. There'll be lots of, you know, examples of poor internal communication. And I think there will probably be a vacuum in the senior strategic leadership of the business about where they should be placing their bets at the moment, about what is really going to sustain their business and make them money.
And is it because Apple don't have those same conflicts of interest within their organisation?
Yeah.
They're not so reliant on the ad revenue that Google's reliant on.
100%.
So it's very easy for them to go, we're going to turn this off.
Yep.
They don't have a 30...
And we'll focus on the other parts of our business.
They don't have a $35 billion ad network.
Exactly.
That is dependent on Google being dominant in the open web. I don't know, like, there's a bunch of stuff going on here. I don't know if they're making a calculus around what will happen. Because, like, the reality is you need to take a hacksaw to Google, right? I would love to see that company broken up into 5 different businesses. Like, I mean, this is getting ridiculous. The reason we're in this situation is because Google's so bloody big, right? $170 billion in search revenue, $35 billion in display ad net revenue. It's just a monster. And the thing is, should it actually own a feckin' browser in the first place?
No.
That's the question. Like, should the browsers be independent of these media businesses?
Well, yeah, they definitely should be, especially if what we're talking about is upholding privacy and consumer control.
This will not help Google's case in, like, this DOJ...
In the eyes of the DOJ.
This DOJ case, this ad tech case in September, is seminal, right? It could be... Google will be forced to divest. It will happen. It will happen this year. And I don't know if they're making the calculus around it. So if we kind of, like, give in around the cookie stuff, maybe they'll go easy on us. But it's not going to happen. Like, they own too much of the business. And the sensible thing would be make Chrome sort of almost like Safari, a dead zone to them, just like everybody else. Let other technologies sort of fill that capitalist gap, because I believe in capitalism, right? Where there's a vacuum, there'll be some other technologies to fill the gap. Get rid of third-party cookies and force them to sell GAM. Get AdX, GAM and AdSense and AdMob out of Google completely and just make it demand side completely. So, you know, I'm generally easy on Google, but today, like, I'm pretty annoyed by this, because all it does is just hinders the great innovation that's going on in the space to serve some political sort of agenda for Google.
But just turning that around a little bit, I can understand why you feel deflated, Kieran, but you've got a good pair of socks on today, I just noticed. Usually your sock game's really poor, but you've got some good polka-dotted socks.
They are good socks.
I think there may be can-related socks. A tiny logo on them.
There is the other side of this, which is that I know what you mean. It naturally slows down potentially the growth of innovation in the industry. But as I was saying earlier, I do still think there are a lot of people in the industry that will be forging ahead no matter what, because they're so far down the road.
Including a lot of publishers.
Absolutely. Yeah. The publishers will be definitely leading that charge, because those publishers that we know of, you know, some really sophisticated publishers here in the UK, The Telegraph is the one that first springs to mind, because we've spoken with them at length about their monetization and business models. But once they've weaned themselves off reliance mm-hmm. on that Chrome traffic, they want to run their business differently. Right, they love the feeling of independence and the sense of freedom that it gives their business model, and I think that will be a great shining example for publishers that are similar. Obviously, not all publishers will have the benefit of having that type of business. There's a whole diverse range of publishers, and then there's also brands and advertisers and agencies that are doing way more interesting things now that they've started to build out sophisticated data strategies and creating sophisticated sense of data culture within their businesses. You know, this is a conversation that 5-4 years ago you couldn't really have with CMOs at big FMCGs. They were mostly concerned about the bottom line. These days, people have got a far more sophisticated view of the way they should be executing their marketing and advertising.
I think all it does is slow down the progress. You're right. The wheels have turned in terms of where the industry's going, right? I think that the future, like, there's areas where Google are very, very weak in. Apart from YouTube, which they own, I think they're very weak on the mediation side on CTV, right? I think they're very weak in retail media. I think they don't even have a curation play, which is good for the rest of us. There's technologies like seller-defined audience, which I think would be the bedrock of, I use that word bedrock, would be the bedrock of the sort of like future of scaling programmatic buys without using a cookie. There's so much cool stuff going on. I'm just a little bit disappointed because I feel this is going to slow things down. I think ultimately Google will have to deprecate cookies. They'll come back to the table and they will make from a neutral play around that. And I think the IAB Tech Lab, which they said, if Google could drop that sort of like, you know, unnecessary involvement of Chrome within sort of the activation piece in the auction process on Privacy Sandbox, I think that would be good enough to pass the CMA. I think this cookie stuff has to happen, because ultimately I think it's good for Google to kind of do this, because it takes the scrutiny off them. Like, it's just, it's the people are looking at them now, right? The power they have. But keep it, I know you're saying it benefits Google to have the cookie, but it doesn't really, because we get to September, that's still in there, that's still a black mark in their column, right? Because the jury will say Google have so much control. They own, you know, 60% of the browser market. They own all of this ad tech. They own the ad server market. They have complete and utter control. And with the cookie, they control the attribution. They have the whole game.
Very true. And I think if they would like to agree, disagree, or discuss, please get in touch.
You never come on here. I mean, have you seen Alex Cohn today? He is hiding in a canteen somewhere in Google. I love Alex. But Alex, how's that chicken going down today? Hey? Very badly.
Did anybody else think it was amusing that when Rachel said, Kieran, tell them about your LinkedIn poll.
Yeah.
It was like a sort of teacher going, tell your mum what you drew today. Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, I did a little LinkedIn poll.
Well, it's because he's got a little sad face on, so I was just trying to...
No, not sad. I actually do feel sorry for people working at Google. I don't know how you defend this.
Their paycheck?
A bloody nightmare.
There's a lot less people working at Google now than there was 3 months ago, so there's also
they're finding new homes. Yeah. Well, we're shortly running out of time, but before we do, Rachel did allude to the fact that this is our 300th episode. I'd like each of you to cast your memories back and share some of the highlights of the memories, the situations, the locations, the conversations that you've had with some of our fantastic guests over the years. Who'd like to kick off?
I'm always going to have to go with the poor guys at Permitive and News UK who we did a podcast
Hang
with
on
in
a second,
Mexico.
Poor guys. What about the poor sound guys?
So poor guys, because they had to deal with me. They had absolutely no voice and was a little bit delicate from the night before, because obviously it's Mexico. So you imagine how it went. I could not actually speak, yet that didn't stop me trying to speak and trying to kind of have this voice on the podcast. And then we had Anne-Marie, who was sound guy for the first time, and much to original sound guy's chagrin, did a truly terrible job and basically had the volume turned down the whole time.
And we were in a
glass box in a trade hall in hall
Thank
six
you.
And it was
if
just
you
an
could
absolute
paint a picture for people it was the awful that would be helpful.
It was a very challenging environment.
It was hilarious. Yeah, it was
thanks.
Hilarious.
I'm glad that's up there for
yeah.
you.
And Rachel? then I had the original sound guy calling me, going, What the hell is this? Yeah. And I was like, yeah, it's fine, pop a shit, it'll be fine. Yeah. He's going, I honestly can't put my name to it. So I went, don't worry, you don't have to, it's fine. It'll be okay.
We've already blamed it on Anne-Marie.
Yeah. And then I listened to it and I realised what the problem was. But that was a good one.
Rachel?
For me, and I just relived it with a couple of people in the office earlier on, replayed it. It was an early doors podcast in the old office.
Kieran's laughing, you know.
Is it a toasted sandwich one, is it?
No. Also, you can have that one.
This came up.
I don't know, it was probably like episode 6 or 7. So, you know, an odd.
Still finding our feet, shall we say.
Yeah, 293 episodes ago. And we had Kevin Flood, who was at the time CEO of Powerlinx, into the office as the guest. And Kieran and I had a massive blazing row, like literally a nanosecond before he walked in the door. And in fact, I think he walked into the tail end of it. And there was obviously some lovely staff in the office with us, and Kieran's in one corner and I'm in the next. And I'm going, pointing and shouting, and he's pointing and shouting back. And then Kevin walks in and we're like, oh, hi, Kev. Yeah, no worries. Yeah, just take a seat. And sat down and got to the microphones. And it was all fine until after I introduced Kevin. I said, and also joining us today on the podcast is Kieran. I came from Exchange Wire. And Kieran goes, hello, Rachel.
You actually called him our mouthy, opinionated CEO, Kieran.
Then I had to confess to the listeners that we just had a massive row. But we made up, didn't yeah. we?
I don't even know it was over. I think it was over biscuits or something. Stupid like that.
Likely.
These episodes seem to be, you know, casualties or whatever might happen. I remember coming in, I think it was a Christmas special, and I was unbelievably hungover. I think there was like a drinks thing in Farringdon, and I was eating a toasted sandwich, and and we were chatting and that, getting angry. One piece of the toasted sandwich got stuck in my hair.
True professional.
And these two were laughing at me. And I was looking
uncontrollable.
So hungover. Like, you know, you didn't even know what's going on. And literally this like sort of random dreadlock piece of like diesel ham, toasty, just hanging off my hair. Like,
it was in your hair. It was on your jumper. It was on the floor.
It was just a tragedy, hey, really. Not I feel like it was more comedy gold. If we'd put it out on YouTube, we'd probably get a million views.
We should start video recording our podcast.
No, we're not doing that.
I'm not sure that's a good idea.
Oh, I don't know. It's popular. Why don't we put it on a short form video platform like TikTok?
Yeah. Snapchat.
Or TikTok.
Snapchat. Oh, TikTok.
TikTok earlier on? I don't know. I've got a few on the go.
Tiki-taka? Yeah. Isn't that what the Spanish do with the football?
What's your favourite moment?
I don't know. There's a few whereby that post letter slot thing that you talked about.
Post letter door slots.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Or just.
Apparently, they don't have post boxes, letter boxes in Australia.
No, they don't.
Indoors.
We don't have them indoors.
Generally, when the podcast travels, I think that's most entertaining because there's some sort of shenanigans that we've got to deal with via jet lag or language barriers or
technical difficulties.
Crumbling headphones. The last time.
Venues closing down and people still recording.
Yeah,
you know, Madrid,
that was fun
I think.
In Madrid.
Well, the last time that you were roaming sound guy for us in Singapore and you did a great job and you had the headphones on and we packed up, finished podcast, packed up, walked out the room and you just had sort of fragments of black sort of plasticky foamy business all the way down your face from the disintegrating headphones who didn't like the humidity and heat.
No, they didn't. They're not the only thing that didn't like the humidity and heat and lack of sleep. But we've, you know, thankfully we've got some new headphones. Haven't got any new signs, but yeah, we did. For sure, you're spoiling us. Anyway, on that note, I think it's time to wrap up. So thank you for listening. That's this week's Mad Tech Podcast. Thank you to Kieran, Rachel and Lindsay.
Thank you.
Thanks to all our listeners. 300 episodes.
Yeah, thanks listeners.
All three of you that are left. No, just kidding. Thanks for listening, folks. That's it.